Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever and whenever you happen to be listening to us in this great wide world brought together by the internet. The last three guys to do a podcast are back in our home studios, better known as Leon Brown's Kitchen. We do have YouTube capabilities, but we're going to wait till we're all together before busting that one out. Daniel Bolton calling in on our text line, on our call-in line. You can sponsor the call-in line with a hefty contribution to our budget. Just hit us up at John_Morgo to find out how and to get information on that. That's on Twitter. We'd love to get this call-in line sponsored, and you can get great publicity and advertising for that, because we have a worldwide reach. Anyone listens is getting in on the action here. We are the last three guys to do a podcast. Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown. College football has started. We were on location yesterday in Waleska, Georgia, where we called about almost 56 minutes of the Reinhardt game with Weber International. Reinhardt wins it 16-6. We'll get everyone's impressions on that one a little later, but let's start, guys, Daniel, Leon, with the breaking news that came out of Indianapolis last night. Andrew Luck is retiring. He's pulling his he's going back. He's saying, you know what, I just don't have the drive anymore. He just doesn't have the love of the game that he had, and that is why he's hanging up his gunslingers. He's hanging up his belt. He's putting it all away. He's going to be with his family. So, Daniel, what do you think about what has happened yesterday in Indianapolis?
Well, I want to start off by saying I thought I was a little shocked to hear it come from Andrew. I guess the way that he exited as well, I didn't have a problem with it. Of course, the Colts fans had a problem with it. He exited during their preseason game last night. I'm shocked at the decision, but when I think about it, I'm not really shocked. And I mean, listen, Andrew Luck, 29 years old, quarterback, but he's been hurt the last three out of the last 4 years. And I think that it was simply because of the fact that the strain that you have to put on your body to prepare yourself to get hit 100 times a game in a 16-game season.
All right, I'm sorry to cut you off there, Daniel, but we do have our guest. I believe he's just calling in on the other end of the line, Sam Crenshaw. Sam, you there?
Hey, Sam. Hey, what's going on? How y'all doing?
Appreciate you calling in, Sam. We were just talking about the Andrew Luck situation. I'll ask you about that in a moment. But first of all, I wanted to get you in here because, as I said, high school football just started. Corky Kell Classic, you were there at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium on Saturday. You were there at Colray Field for the washout. But first of all, with the Mercedes-Benz games on Saturday, what was your opinion, your impression of what you saw out there?
Man, saw some, some good impressions and some statements made, mm-hmm. Especially in some places with new head coaches.
Right.
And I think that was it. A lot of people were waiting to see what Colquitt County was going to look like and play like without Rush Probst. They saw that. They didn't, and they won a game, I guess, an opponent they could see later on, again, in North Gwinnett.
Right.
To me, by far, that's probably one of the better matchups. And then the finish of things, of course, with that Walton Norcross contest. That was just a surprise. Walton just caught fire and got things going with their running game there in the fourth quarter. And Norcross just couldn't seem like just ran out of steam. And, they got in position for a kicker, and the kicker missed it badly. And
right.
I know he's committed to Navy. He didn't have the best game yesterday. He had some pretty bad punts and missed a field goal attempt earlier. But it's early. It's early. The
yes,
lights are on.
Yes, it is. Yeah, I hope he didn't, if you'll excuse the pun, I hope he didn't sink his chances with Navy.
I hope not either. But that's the thing. And Norcross, after all, has produced some great, kickers. When you think there's one now at Georgia, and they got one at South Carolina.
Right.
This guy's supposed to be next in that line. Impressed with what you saw for the Franklin Stevens era getting started at McEachern. I'm not surprised, having known him for a number of years. He has an opportunity with that type of talent and a place with that type of support and facility. They'll be in the state championship game, if not this year, next year. I just think that he's going to have that program going so strong and being that little thing that gets them over the top. Also, like what Josh Lovelady was able to do last night as the first game as a head coach at Mill Creek. Man, they still got the big offensive line that he always worked with, but now as a head coach, they continue to roll with their season opener. So it was some good games. Archer got theirs in and just dominated Tucker last game at Hallford Stadium. And we know now that Milton has won the coin flip, the coin toss. We don't know where the coin toss was held.
Well, it's probably at a Waffle House somewhere, because that's where they always do the...
That is the most popular place that has been established by high school coaches in this state for years, that Waffle House is the spot for those coin flips. And I'm sure it was one somewhere between Buford and Nielsen, somewhere up there. They stopped, had a cup of coffee, and went out in the parking lot, and they flipped that coin. So they're going to put that game on September 6th over at Milton.
Right, that'll be a week from Friday, not this Friday coming up, because Milton is hosting the Freedom Bowl. They got that game with Alpharetta on Thursday, and then it'll be the following Friday. Again, all that was predicated because of the monsoon that swept through Cool-Ray Field. You and I were there for that. Right when they were about to kick off, it started pouring, as I joked on Twitter, and I'm waiting for Noah to pick me up.
But you know what, John? I still can't believe that the grounds crew didn't move to cover that infield.
Yes.
I still can't believe, I think anytime it's going to rain at a professional ballpark, the grounds crew, whoever's at work that day, that's the deal when you work in minor league baseball. You could be selling commercial spots. You could be the radio broadcaster. But if you're there when it rains, you're going to help pull that tarp and cover that infield.
Right.
And just the idea that they just let it rain on it. I'm like, it's like, okay, if it rains on it, they can't play the games anyway. We all know Stryper's still got more baseball to play on that field.
Yeah, they got one more series left. I think it's against Durham. It's either Norfolk or Durham. I think it might be Norfolk.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And that's priority one for that field, obviously.
There was a
contingency plan to move those games if there had been inclement weather by Thursday, but Thursday 12 noon was the cutoff time. And Thursday 12 noon, it was sunshine, blue skies, and nice and hot.
Right.
You know what I mean? But the contingency plan was, had there been bad weather and that field had been underwater, they were going to play those games at Buford.
Okay.
But it didn't happen in time to make that change in arrangement, which that field doesn't stay underwater. That outfield is like you wring it out like a sponge, man. That thing dried up quickly.
Oh, good.
Once the rain stopped, the grass was fine. It was just that the infield was soup. It didn't do anything with that.
Exactly. And if you got cleats out there for two games, it's going to be completely destroyed.
Destroyed.
It's a good thing they did that. I mean, I was on the field. I know you were too, Sam. I didn't even see where the tarp was. I mean, did they just move it out of the way?
No, it was right there on the third base line.
Okay.
It was right there up against the wall right there in the third base foul line.
Okay.
And it was right there. I kept looking at it. I said, are the guys on a break? And then after it stopped raining, they walked out there, and I'm like, "Well, why didn't they come out, pull the top, and cover the infield?" But I guess that worked. I guess that wasn't their job that night. You know?
I guess not. And honestly, there were so many people milling around during then. It would have been like a fire drill trying to get everyone out of the way. Because I think if we're you're talking about the TV crew where their live remotes down on the field, that was set up right near there. They would have had to move that and then roll the top. It would have been a logistical nightmare for them to get it. But now, like I said, now they know. Now they know that if they're ever going to do this, move the tarp to an advantageous position so they can move it out. Speaking of the Saturday game, Sam, the only thing that I'm kind of I don't want to say surprised, but, I would think that Colquitt County, North Gwinnett game would have been the last game, the last draw of the night, but instead it was Mill Creek and East Coweta.
I think you're also considering logistics and travel.
Okay.
And so I think Colquitt is always kind of the game up in the day for this. They haven't scheduled them to play late games because they got to hike to get back home once it's over.
Exactly.
And you never know when that last game is going to start.
Right.
If one of your early games goes to overtime, oh my goodness, they may not kick that game off till 10 o'clock.
Right.
So that's a long drive back to Moultrie.
Yeah, it is.
After you do that. So I think that's the reason why they put them kind of in the middle. or in the kind of the middle of the day.
Well, high school just kicked off. College will kick off this Saturday. You're going to be heading up to Knoxville, do sideline reporting for the Georgia State Radio Network as the Panthers start year 10 on the gridiron with the Tennessee Volunteers. So, Sam, you've been down talking to Coach Elliott. You've seen the team as they've been preparing. What's the focus? How do they look heading with 1 week to go heading to this opener?
The players I talked with this week were aggravated. They were aggravated. They were agitated. And you know why?
Why?
For two straight days, Coach Sean Elliott had piped in the song Rocky Top.
Oh, gosh.
And had to play it nonstop in practice.
Oh,
that's how you get them.
And, man, those guys were ill. I mean, I talked with the Pistol back, Jalen Jones. I said, how you guys like that song? And it's the most irritating and aggravating thing. So for two straight days throughout Georgia State Stadium, you could hear the strains of the Tennessee band playing Rocky Top
on a loop.
Just, and it's bad enough if you ever been to a game in Knoxville. When you leave that game, that song is stuck in the back of your head.
And that's the problem.
It's not
like they play it for touchdowns. They play it if the guy gets 5 yards on first down.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
they don't have to have a reason.
No, they just play it.
Who said you have to have a reason to play that song? Just play it. And
exactly.
And that's just what they do. The team has had some good workouts. I was there, middle of the week last week, and they had a good workout. I think they feel like it's ramping up and getting closer to game week. And it seems like they have a little extra bounce. The coaches have a little extra bounce.
Right.
Everybody seems to have a lot of enthusiasm and ready to go. So I think the idea is you got some experience in your offensive line. I think they feel like they can score points.
Mm-hmm.
The thing of it is can the defense, stop? And, of course, Tennessee is not Tennessee yet. And I say that because they're still getting players in under Coach Jeremy Pruitt. To me, they're still seeking their identity.
Right.
So, the Tennessee team that starts on Saturday will be a different team that will play in the month of November. They just got to grow up to me and get some confidence in each other. They got the quarterback is playing for, I think, his third or fourth offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. That's how much change has been going on with that program. And, once they get some consistency and they get back to being the Tennessee that we remember, but I don't think they're there right now. I think they're kind of guessing, like, who are we? And to me, it's a good time to play them.
Exactly. Because the thing about Tennessee is their fan base is kind of stuck in 1998. They expect a quick fix. They expect to be back at the upper echelons of the SEC yesterday. And with as far as that program has fallen, that's just not going to happen. It is going to take them a couple of years to come back. And, of course, me going to Vanderbilt, I'm all for stepping on them when they're down. I'm all for that. Vanderbilt has won.
Like that.
We have won 5 of the last 7 against Tennessee, and I want that to keep going. I mean, there could be a 4 years class for Tennessee if Vanderbilt wins again this year that will have never beaten the Commodores, and that hasn't happened this century.
That speaks volumes. That tells you a lot about the program and where it is right now.
Exactly. It's not going to happen overnight. So, Sam, we know Dan Ellington is going to be a force behind them, but he's lost Penny Hart. Who has he found a rapport with in the early stages of camp?
Well, you got some good receivers still out there that are back, and the one I'm watching for is a guy that got an injury last season, December 15th, Sam Pinckney. If he can come back and pick up where he left off, he should be a great one for him. Christian Owens, you got some tall guys. Christian Owens, a big 6'4", guy that can throw the ball to and catch it. Also, Cornelius McCoy was a guy number 83, a guy to watch from last season. So he has some capable receivers, some guys who stepped in. Not quite Penny Hart, but some guys are looking for their opportunity. You got a guy like Jonathan Effetti, who's been a veteran in the program, so we look for good things from him. They have some capable guys. Devin Gentry as well is a senior now in this program. So he got some experienced receivers. You got some tools on offense to work with. You got a fantastic tight end. Also, Roger Carter, who's a great guy. And I've seen them go to him a lot in practice. I don't know if that's something we can watch for during, in games. But he's a good guy for moving the sticks and getting your first down, keeping those possessions going. The running game was the big thing last year. No, it wasn't a great successful season on the field, right, but it established the running game really for the first time in the history of the program. Georgia State's, you know, running attack had struggled. So you got an experienced line and you got some experienced runners coming back and some speed, guys like Seth Page and guys like Trey Barnett, who I talked to as well last week. They both hate Rocky Top all day, too. You got some tools on offense. The question is defense. Can you get some pass rush and have that secondary that was so depleted by injury last year forced to play a lot of freshmen and redshirt freshmen? Are those guys back and ready to contribute and play successfully? I think that's what we're watching for.
All right, speak with Sam Crenshaw of so many sources, 92.9, Georgia State Radio Network, GPB, 1111, and I'm sure I'm missing two or three different things here on the last three guys to do a podcast. Daniel, do you got any questions for him?
I don't have a question, but I do have a prediction. Everything that Sam just said, I think Georgia State goes to Knoxville and upset Tennessee. I've been saying that for the last month now, even before Sam came on and said what he said. Okay. But he's right on the money. Tennessee doesn't have an identity yet. We don't know who Tennessee really is. And besides, in games like this, they're known to kind of fall back a little bit. I got Georgia State upset Tennessee. Am I crazy, Sam?
No, you're not. No, you're not. Not at all. I mean, for someone who went with Georgia State several years ago to Wisconsin, and everybody gave them a snowball chance up there. If you go there and you play your game and keep your head on straight, obviously you're in their place. Obviously you got to keep your penalties and miscues to a minimum. You know that's mm-hmm. that's a big problem. You can't gift anything to them. You got to make them earn it. But, I mean, the idea is to survive and be around in the second half. And it was amazing to be at Camp Randall Stadium and hear that place with over 80,000 people quiet in the fourth quarter after they did a jump around, of course, right, at the end of the third quarter. But the place was quiet because Georgia State had come up there and they were leading in the fourth quarter of that game. And I still believe if they didn't change quarterbacks in the fourth quarter of that game, Georgia State would have come out of there with a win. So, I mean, to me, it'll be the best way possible to kick off the 10th season of Georgia State football, to go up there and really pull off the big upset up at Knoxville this weekend.
10 years of Georgia State football, I cannot believe it is.
Time just flies, doesn't
exactly.
it?
Since playing that game that night at the Georgia Dome, it gets shorter to get things started in that first season. And the game I remember most about that first season was Jacksonville State, which was a game that they lost. It was a close defeat. But it was the Jacksonville State that had gone to do Oxford, Mississippi, and then beat Ole Miss the year before. And to me, with Georgia State being a brand new program, Jacksonville State has a winning tradition in their classification. It's like, well, let's see if we can go toe to toe with these guys. And I said, okay, the possibilities are there. Some things that have changed. They went through conference changes. That was one thing. Right. They're set now. Their members are in the Sun Belt. They've shown that they can have success. And to me, the biggest surprise was having a three-game winning streak over Georgia Southern so soon. That totally caught me by surprise that they would so soon after starting to play them in football. And right now, we're still up 3-2 in the five meetings that they played against those guys. And I'm sure the folks in Statesboro don't appreciate that very much. That's one of the pleasant surprises of this program is being able to hang with those guys and beat them three straight years. So looking forward to that. I'm excited about the coaching staff and some additions they made, especially Coach Jimmy Smith, who's been a coach over at Cedar Grove. The aim is to do that to beef up recruiting in the metro Atlanta area and around the state. He's so very well respected for what he accomplished for the Cedar Grove football program. And so I think that's something we're going to see in the next recruiting class. We're going to see a bit more of the metro Atlanta area and the state of Georgia players coming in to be a part of the Georgia State program. So, you know, just a lot to look forward to.
I just want us to bring back some of that 2017 magic, you know, the first year that we finished over 500. I just wanted to see that. You know, let's get another bowl game. I just want to be able to wear my GSU sweatshirt proudly.
Well, I think the team has that in mind. I think they're going to go out and with the idea of surprising some people. And I think the schedule sets up pretty well for them. I mean, you have a game, obviously, up in Tennessee. You got to go up to Western Michigan. That's what's up. We owe those guys one. They came down here and really pushed us around last year. But they took advantage of the inexperience in the secondary. If we shore those things up, I think we have a better chance against those guys. The game that kind of troubles me is the game right in the middle of the schedule is when Army comes to town.
Okay.
Them dudes,
that's
them
the game,
dudes,
too. Yeah.
Them dudes are balling, man. Mm-hmm. And I've never seen an Army team play and win the way this team does. The last time we saw them, they hung 70 points on Houston in that bowl game.
Yeah.
70 points. Army has gone some seasons and not scored 70 points the whole year.
Right.
You know, and 70 points by Army, man. And the thing of it is, the other thing is, look at their roster. They got anywhere from 20 to 25 players from the state of Georgia.
See, that's the key.
Playing on Army.
See, that's the key.
You know what I mean?
Everyone knows this.
And that's a bit of a problem, too. That's not a good stat.
No, it is.
Well, the thing of it is, it's that they're looking for a certain type of player. And that's the thing that, and I get back on my soapbox about high school football in our state. What kind of player are you looking for your program? You can find them in this state. But the schools like Army and Navy are looking for a certain type of player.
Mm-hmm.
And they're able to come here and find that type of player, the guy who has the mentality and the aptitude, the GPA, and is going to go out and play with the way that the style of football that they play. You got to remember, first thing you think about when you're facing a military academy is discipline. They're not going to beat themselves. You're going to have to beat them, you know. And so that's the whole thing. Now you got Army, you got great coaching up there, and they're reeling in some talent. And the crowd is going to be an interesting crowd for that game. I just say that because they got so many players from Georgia on their team.
Yeah, you're definitely going to have people come in. Sam, in your 10 years at Georgia, in your 10 years covering Panther football, who has been like the one player that, not so much for his football capacity, but what he's been able to do outside of the university, outside of football, outside of classes, what has impressed you the most about that?
Wow, there are a lot of guys, but I mean, I'm looking at the guys who are contributing in the NFL. I mean, a lot of people can think of that. And Albert Wilson obviously jumps out there because of what he's been able to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
And I still like to joke with him because that first season we go for a Thursday night game down in Tuscaloosa, and that was a disastrous game because I mean Bill Curry, back there's Bill Curry going back to Tuscaloosa and taking this brand new football program to play a game, and the guys get off the bus, man, and they walk out for warm-ups, and it's almost like they wanted to get autographs. Oh man, that's Julio Jones. This is where you gonna tackle him, or you gonna ask for an autograph? We're gonna, you know. And I think Coach Curry could tell quickly that they were a little starstruck by it. But in the second half, Wilson hauls in his putt and gets to the right side and streaks down the sideline and scores a touchdown for Georgia State. And whenever I see him, I say, you know, man, the folks in Tuscaloosa are still trying to catch him. And a big smile comes on his face. And he's done very well with the Kansas City and now with the Miami Dolphins. So, I mean, he's one of the guys. But I mean, not all of them have achieved those things.
No.
But it's great to see a lot of them come back and still be around the program. And they're looking for a chance to have some, you know, come back and be a part of the coaching staff at some point, you know. We've had enough guys who've gone through the program and were really great and great products. And, you know, you just, when you think about that, that's what I enjoy most when I think about those guys. And they laid a foundation for something that is going to be special for years to come. Now with having Georgia State Stadium,
right.
Now with having all of their facilities in the stadium,
mm-hmm.
I think that's the other thing, too. If you guys haven't had a chance to go by and see it, it is simply incredible. The weight rooms there, all their training, nutrition, the new housing facility that's going up in the parking lot across the street. Most of the football will be staying there, so no reason to be late for practice or meeting.
No, exactly. You're right across the street.
When you're going to be right across the street, you can't say, well, Coach, I'm on the other side of campus. I'm staying way up on Edgewood. Nope. You're not on Edgewood. You're right across the street. So we're going to take away that excuse, and I just think it's set to stay. I think it gets the team a little more motivated, too, the fact that they have everything there, but the university has put at their fingertips for the meeting rooms, The conference rooms, the theater area where the big team can come in and put the big screen up.
Right.
And obviously the locker rooms are state of the art. Match that against anywhere in any other Division I program. So those things are all there. It's up to the team to go out and execute and really shock and surprise some people. There are a couple of teams in the conference that are still trying to get, you know, we want to get a win over Troy. Mm-hmm. That would mean a lot. Troy's coming here this year.
Right.
They want to get a win over App State. They've never beaten those guys. App State comes here this year.
Okay.
So, I mean, to me, those are two big games I think you look for, home games. And they're in that part of the schedule, too, where you want to get those wins to help you lock yourself into a postseason bid. And a win over either one of those teams, I think, would really help do it.
Yeah, well, hopefully we get things rolling, if not with Tennessee, then with Furman the following week. All right.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Sam, we can talk to you forever, but one quick thing before you go. What is your impression on the Andrew Luck situation?
Man, that came out of the blue last night, and I must tell you, I left Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I came home. I'm going back and forth between the Braves, which added another new piece last night. They're kind of like the New England Patriots of baseball. They just got guys and plug them in, and they keep on winning.
Right.
But, you know, all right, now let's do like the Patriots and finish it and win the World Series. But
exactly. I mean,
the way things are going right now, that's pretty cool. So I'm watching the Braves. I'm watching Florida against Miami. And, you know, Jaron Williams, they had a decent start. He's got to get rid of that football sometime. Of course, we covered him in high school.
I said the same thing, Sam.
Yeah.
You know, he looked good. Obviously, he's a redshirt freshman. He's got the ability, but he's got to get rid of that ball, man, when he's in trouble. But I was watching that, and then going back and watching the late game at Corky Kale, and all of a sudden the bottom of the screen comes this news alert. And that, maybe I'm not totally surprised, simply because he's had so much to deal with, so many complications. And I guess you hit a wall at the point where you say, man, I'm just not willing to fight this battle anymore.
Right.
To get healthy. I'm sure that a lot of Colts fans are wishing he had stuck it out one more year. If he does this time next year, you tank the whole season because you want to go for Trevor Lawrence.
Right.
But see, they can't do that for that. You know, they can't do that this year. So.
Well, they go for Jake Fromm.
Well, they could. They could. That could be a possibility, too. But at this stage, this close to the start of the season, I think that's the thing. To hear people boo him and whatnot, yeah, some of those people probably season ticket holders.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have probably already had him in their fantasy draft or whatever. I don't know why you would boo a man who would come in and give it his best.
Well, I think
for your city, for your team.
Well, I think Andrew needs to look over his shoulder, because if you're watching Twitter, O.J. Simpson drafted him in his fantasy draft. And,
oh wow!
So if I'm Andrew Luck, I'm changing the locks of my house.
You want to be want to be taken in OJ's fantasy draft, man.
No.
That's amazing. Dude jumps on Twitter, got about 9 million followers, just like that.
Exactly.
It's amazing. Do people care, or are people just curious?
I think they're curious. I think they're curious more than anything. But
yeah.
All right. I get.
All right, Sam, we're going to have to let you go there. Thanks so much for joining us.
Right.
I'll see you in Knoxville, and we'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate it, Sam.
All right, enjoy Sam, it as always, gentlemen.
All right.
All right, man. Take it easy.
All right. Okay, take care now.
Okay, that was Sam Crenshaw joining the Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast. Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown still around. I don't do fantasy football drafts. I used to. I kind of got out of it once I moved to another job. Did you guys draft Andrew Luck in any of your fantasy drafts?
You know, I don't get into fantasy football. That's like one – that's like another addiction to add to the cabinet. I already know. But my friends and I have been telling me for years, hey, you need to start doing fantasy, fantasy basketball, fantasy football. But, you know.
Well, I don't think you would, Leon, would be particularly interested in this, because fantasy football, because it would force you to do things you're not really comfortable with, like rooting for the Raiders.
Right.
If you wind up drafting, say, Antonio Brown, want him in camp and doing things.
Yeah, and I was glad to hear about all the chaos that's been going on at Hard Knocks, all the dysfunction. I'm like, that's what I'm talking about. Beat yourselves, because when we come to town, I need us to beat you guys.
Right.
So, you know, but in reference to Andrew Luck, you know, I'm not a Colts fan, but – from a human point of view, I'm not mad at Andrew Luck for that. You know,
I'm not.
The coach didn't even try to recoup the money they got from him.
No, they didn't. They just let him go. And I think that was very – because I think he owed him about $28.4 million. I think that was the final total on that. You know, I may be wrong, but that's the number that jumps out at me when I'm thinking – because I just saw it about 5 minutes ago. So, yeah, I don't blame him at all. And for the Colts fans who booed him, first of all, it was – first of all, Adam Schefter broke the news – and everyone's phones started blowing up with the breaking news. Yeah, and Andrew
Daniel broke the news to me. I was in disbelief. I looked at my text messages. I think Daniel sent me the text around within like the 9 o'clock hour.
Yeah,
I was asleep. I woke up and I look on my. I didn't even. I thought I was dreaming. I was like, no, it's not. No, okay, Daniel, Andrew Luck retired. What's next?
Well, what happened was I was in the NFL Network satellite studios logging the Rams, the game between the Rams and the Broncos, and. They interrupted the game for this news, so I texted Daniel saying, "Hey, we got to talk about Andrew Luck tomorrow," and so
yeah,
and he agreed to that, and so he let you know. Actually, I thought I put it on a group text.
Yeah, I think I got it from one of you guys sent it.
It came in on a group text.
Yeah, I was in disbelief. I'm like, yeah, right, okay, I must be dreaming. What's next, Mel saying like,
yeah, but he like I said, Andrew Luck has been beaten up. I didn't know this. He had a lacerated kidney.
Oh my goodness!
And it caused him to instead of urine, he had blood. And that's never good. So this guy has given his body, and he wants to enjoy his golden years, his 50s, when he's in his 50s and when he's in his 60s. He doesn't want the chronic body problems. I liken this to Barry Sanders when he retired at 30, and everyone couldn't believe that. Of course, this was Barry Sanders was in the era before the mandatory retirement age of 30. This was when you, as a running back, went to 40, 35, 37. But no, Barry hung up his cleats right at 30, and that kind of started the whole thing.
Yeah, and this stay in Detroit. Calvin Johnson hung the cleats up early.
Right, Calvin Johnson, Megatron. Yes.
Even if you want to go back further than that, Jim Brown.
Right.
Retired at 30. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 9 years in the league, and he had broken just about every rushing record. And he said, forget this, I quit. I'm not taking this. And more so like Barry Sanders, that would be the first one we would know of, right?
Right.
Barry Sanders, they just wouldn't build a team around him. And well, they relied on his legs to do what he needed to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I made the joke when I played Barry in, like, Madden 88 or 92 or whatever, you know, the first proto generation of Madden. You know, my three plays were Barry left, Barry right, Barry middle. You know, and that's kind of what the Lions were doing. The Lions still have that same problem, where they just get a star and they think, okay, our problems are fixed.
Just run them to the ground. And you know, that's the same. We've seen this happen in different sports. When you look at LeBron, his first 7 years in the league, that's what Cleveland was threatening to do to him.
Right.
You know, they refused to build a team around him, at least with quality stars, to the point where he had to literally throw his jersey in a trash can on national television after a bitter loss to the Celtics, go to another city just to come back, and that's when
the lights went out.
Right.
Oh, I think LeBron might have had a deal with the Cleveland clothing manufacturers.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Force everyone to burn their jerseys, and then, we got to buy new jerseys. You know, I think – you know how much money they made – Nike might have made off of that?
Speaking of which, imagine the amount of money that was lost this year in jerseys. I'm talking about Paul George switching teams.
Right.
Russell Westbrook switching teams.
Everybody needs Jimmy new jerseys.
I mean, all those jerseys have to be trashed now.
Right.
It's like that's crazy.
Or at least send, what they do with the NFL, where they just send the unused shirts to low-income Africa. You know, there are people in Tunisia running around with Buffalo Bills World Series Championship T-shirts.
Or, you know, LeBron was actually contemplating switching numbers from giving Anthony Davis 23
mm-hmm.
and him taking 6. Imagine how many jerseys that the Lakers would have to dump off. Just because this man changed his mind.
Right.
So, you know, it's a lot of implications with simple things like that. But, yeah, I'm not mad at all with Andrew Luck. If I was him, I would have did the same thing because, you know, look at life. There is a such thing as life after football.
Right. And that's the whole – oh. Well, we're going to have another special guest calling in. You're going to love this, guys. And it's my mom and dad calling in on our text line to the last three guys to do a podcast. I'm John Morgo, Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown. Do I have my mom or my dad?
What are you doing?
I'm recording. It's my dad. I'm recording my podcast, Dad. We're right now discussing the Andrew Luck situation over in Indianapolis.
I got two things for you.
Okay.
I got two things you got to tell me. Maris off this week?
Yes, Maris was off this week.
And did you get your new Sports Illustrated?
I got it. Yes, I got the NFL preview. I did receive it. I haven't really looked through it yet. I've been kind of running around all weekend. What do they have?
Look at the people in the news.
Oh, wait a minute. I did hear about that.
There's a little picture in there that's going to Vanderbilt.
Yeah, I did see that. I think I did see about that. Okay. All right. Did you enjoy yesterday, Dad? You know, 12 o'clock Vegas time, you had football. You had Youngstown State and Samford. Did you watch that game?
Yeah, I did.
And then you had Arizona, Miami, and then Florida, Miami. So Arizona, Hawaii, and Florida, Miami. So you've been pretty happy, huh?
Well, I only watched the first half of the Hawaii game. They were ahead 28-21 at the half. I don't even know who won. It wasn't in the paper.
I think Hawaii won that game.
But Arizona didn't look very good. Nobody looked good. Florida looked terrible.
Yeah, that's what I saw. That's what I saw.
I saw all of that game. Youngstown looked pretty good. But then you don't know how good Samford is.
Right.
I always thought Samford was in Birmingham. They're in Montgomery.
Right. Yeah. Faulkner's in Montgomery too. But yeah, Samford is there. I think Alabama A&M is there. Or no, Alabama State is there. That's right. So
I thought they were. I always thought Samford was in Birmingham.
Okay, Dad.
When you going home?
We'll be finishing up in about 25 minutes. So I'll probably go. I might stop somewhere. I'll be home at 8. Well, I'll be home probably a little later than 8:15.
You can call me later on when you get some time.
Okay, no problem, Dad.
Maybe Mommy will be up because she's been asleep. She's not feeling good. She's been sleeping all day.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, hope she. All right, no,
okay,
it's that
I'll
cold.
Talk to you later.
All right, talk to you later, Dad. Bye.
All right, bye.
All right, that was my...
Just checking in on you.
Exactly. That was my father, Andrew Morgo.
Checking in. That's what he does, man.
Calling in from Las Vegas. He wants to know about Maris. Wants to know if they played. No, Maris plays next week, I believe, before hosting Canyon Springs from Las Vegas. They'll be coming in to Hugh Spalding Stadium next week. So, yeah, we were discussing the Andrew Luck retirement situation here on The Last Three Guys Do a Podcast. Hopefully, we'll be able to get through it now without any other special guests calling in. I'm not, you know, we're making the claim that Andrew Luck has to do what's best for him, and no one is denying that. I think the Colts fans just got really disappointed. They were hoping to be able to challenge Houston or Jacksonville this weekend or this season, and now they're going to rely wholly on Jacoby Brissett and which other quarterback might get ready or get released in NFL cut day on Saturday. And of course, the elephant in the room, that would be Colin Kaepernick. He says he's ready. And Jim Irsay, he really doesn't care what people think of him. He might actually be the guy to make that phone call, but we won't really know that for another couple of days.
Yeah. I look at to the people are accusing the Colts fans of not being human. Imagine the shock that goes. I'm thinking, okay, from a Charger fan. Or think about if you're a Falcons fan. And, you know, further well from the Charger point of view, it's my team.
Mm-hmm.
We have extremely high expectations this year. I'm looking at Super Bowl or bust this year. I mean, at least let's beat the Patriots in the playoffs this year. You know what I mean? Before Tom, I mean, I feel kind of like my father rest in peace. Okay? At my father's funeral, one of the things I said was I never got a chance to beat my dad at pool. He got up out of here before I got a chance to get him. I came close a couple of times. I never beat my dad in pool. I promise you, I've been every year. I challenge him. I never beat him. And I feel the same way in reference to Phillip Rivers and Tom Brady. Before Tom Brady retires, because they're both. I mean, Tom Brady is about 40, and Phillip is 37, so they're about that. They're around the same time.
Tom Brady's gonna be 42.
He's gonna be 40. He's already into his 40s.
Yes.
You cannot let this guy leave the NFL and you, Phillip Rivers, not put an L on his resume. You got to do it. Do it for me. You know, every year I see, I mean, he did the Peyton Manning a couple times, but you got to get him. So, you know, and I can see, you know, as a Charger fan, I can imagine if we had such high expectations this year, Super Bowl, you know, we want to go make a deep run to the playoffs, then out of nowhere your starting quarterback announces that, you know, I'm going to retire. Oh, man, that was just disappointing. Out of shock, I'm a boo.
Right.
Out of shock.
And the fact that they read about it and he was right there.
Oh, man.
Because he was going to set this whole thing up for I believe, today.
Yeah.
Is when he was actually going to make the formal announcement.
It was supposed to be a 3 o'clock announcement today, guys. And he looked at it and realized that it had got leaked out already. So
yeah, Schefter saw it.
He was kind of shocked a little bit, shell-shocked that he had to make the announcement and that it came out so fast and that Schefter was able to leak that information out. But, you know, again, like I said, as I was sitting on my point, and I think Sam said it best earlier, look, it mentally, it got crazy, mm-hmm. you know, for him. And with the injuries and everything he was battling, I didn't even know he had a lacerated kidney. I mean, you know, I knew he had a foot problem in camp.
Right.
He had a shoulder issue that bothered him, that plagued him for some time. And, you know, just your body, again, going through that recovery or whatnot, it's sometimes not fun.
No.
You know, I've been through a recovery state because I've torn my ACL. And trust me, it is a very overrated experience, okay, to have to go through the physical therapy, and for him to go through the physical therapy and the therapy that he had to go through, I can see and I can imagine why he was so tired of doing what he was doing. Now, I get Leon's point, but at the same time, yeah, it's some fans is probably going to lose out on it or whatnot, but he's got to do what he's got to do. He's put in some work for the last, 8 years, I think it was. I think he was entering his 8th or 9th season. Mm-hmm. He put the work in. He got Indy to, I believe, 2 AFC championships. So, I mean, he's been a viable factor for that team. He's a 4-time Pro Bowler. He won the Comeback Player of the Year last year. He's a well-accomplished athlete, 29 years old. I mean, yeah, he probably still had a little bit to prove. He still had to get that Colts team to a Super Bowl and possibly win a Super Bowl. But we know how hard that can be. So I salute him. Get out, bow out gracefully before anything else or any other damage can happen to you and your body. We've seen this before where athletes have a hard time giving up something that they love, giving up the sport that they love, and they end up paying for it at the end. And I think that that's what Andrew had to think about. He had to think about that, and his family, his girlfriend, anybody had to really be concerned for his longevity. Yeah. And, you know, I give kudos.
Daniel?
Yeah.
Okay, you just dropped out there for a second.
Yeah.
Are you saying how you give kudos?
And then it just kind of went black. So
yeah, we went black.
Oh, I said I give kudos to him for that. That's
okay.
What I said.
All right. All right.
To compound your point, not only do some athletes pay for it with their health and their future, but in, you know, as a Charger fan, Junior Seau, he paid for it with his life.
Right.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah.
Yeah. And we don't want, and like I said, we don't want that to happen to anybody else. And like I said, if Andrew feels like this is what's best for him, then, you know, more power to him. He can live his life however he wants. He's got more money. He doesn't have to work again a day in his life. He can just relax with his, we said it was his girlfriend, his family. So I wish him all the best. I hope he does very well with himself in his later years. It'll be interesting to see where his mind is at maybe in 12 months from now or 11 months when camp starts up for the 2020 season. You know, will he feel the urge to come back? Well, does he need a year to come back? Or it's just a matter of, he said the love of the game was gone. Will that rekindle? Mm-hmm. And I think that is something we'll pay attention to. But, you know, if that's the way he feels, you know, more power to him. And I just want to wish him all the best. All the best. All right,
John.
All right, well, guys, we talked a little bit with Sam about college football starting. We were up in the wilds of Waleska yesterday, broadcasted Reinhardt's 16-6 victory over the Weber International Warriors. If you go to the Reinhardt Athletics on their YouTube channel, they just posted an interview I conducted with Coach James Miller following the ball game. Guys, it was a and my dad kind of said the same thing. A lot of these games early on were just ugly. And this first half between these two. That was ugly, too. It was only, I believe, 9-0 at the end of
It was 3-0.
3-0 at halftime. Then it was not, then Reinhardt finally got moving a little bit. They did score their two touchdowns. Montrelius Moseley, McCollum Lanier finally got in it, and Weber did get a touchdown of their own, but their offense, and that was really the only offense they could muster. So, guys, what do you take out of that ball game?
It kind of reminded me a little bit of it's like a defensive standoff, the reminiscence of the Super Bowl last year.
Right.
My goodness, it's like both defenses had the offense in check. And, you know, it seemed that Reinhardt was relying heavy on, I would say like over 80% on their running game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like they need to trust their quarterback. You got to trust his arm. You got to see some versatility. We want to see, you know, throws downfield. We want to see those you know, just a little bit of versatility in their offense, you know. But their defense was just flying. I mean, there's nothing Weber International could get started. I mean, anything that was that any type of fire that may have been started was stamped out emphatically.
Right.
You know, pronto. So, you know, as you know, both teams' defenses, I think, are going to carry them the bulk of the season. And, you know, when you have such high-powered offense, like, you know, like a Reinhardt is known to have a high-powered offense, even a high-powered offense, you might win.
Mm-hmm.
But with a real ironclad, take-no-nonsense defense, you will win.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I look going forward into the season with Reinhardt, as well as, you know, that was like the gist of the game. Their defense ensured that they got the W.
And the game was canceled with 4:07 remaining in the fourth quarter because of lightning in the area, and it did not, and they didn't think it would clear up for a while. And besides, Weber, based in Orlando, they had a very long bus ride home. So I think, as Sam kind of mentioned with the point about Moultrie and Colquitt County, they wanted to get on the road as soon as possible. And they wanted to make sure they got in tonight, because that is a long, long drive. And I think that was part of the issue for Weber and Reinhardt officials canceling the game when they did, because they didn't know when the storms were clear. I don't think we ever got rain at the field, but there was lightning in the area, and again, they didn't take a chance, and Weber, they just wanted to get out of Dodge and get home. And also, that same weather system struck East Lake Golf Course, where the PGA Tour Championship is. Lightning strike hit a tree, I believe, on the 13th fairway, injured 6 people, none seriously, though, so thank gosh for that. And they did a good job over there getting everybody off the course as fast as possible with that storm front moving in. But, Daniel, let's go back to Reinhardt. JT Graydon, he's one of the linemen that Leon was talking about, had a great game, 2 sacks, had many more disruptions than that. Their defense looked really good, but their offense, it took time for them to get going because the offensive line kind of beat Weber into submission. But what did you take out of that?
Yeah. First off, JT Graydon. Oh my goodness! If this kid doesn't have a future, I don't know who has. I've never seen anybody who could single-handedly put a team on his back in the kind of game that he did. Of course, it was a defensive effort, 3-0 game. Not really a defensive effort because both offenses were not good. Really,
mm-hmm.
in the first half, which was surprising to me and you, John.
Right.
This was Leon's first game, so this was surprising to me and you because we're used to Reinhardt is like one of the top scoring teams in all of NAIA football, and they can put up about 35 points per game in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we were accustomed to. So to see them up only 3-0. And turnovers had a lot to do with it, but the penalties, too. They had a lot of plays, a lot of big plays that were called back on holding penalties and illegal chop blocks, but that comes with the first game of the year, you know. They played a very exceptional team in Weber International who's coming in on a little bit of momentum, but at the same time, it was still a pretty decent win, a defensive effort there by James Miller and his staff. I'm pretty sure they're going to look at tape this week, especially on the offensive end. Weber International, of course, you got 2 freshman quarterbacks that were in. You had the redshirt freshman that played. Didn't get the protection that he was looking for. But, of course, that was against Reinhardt. And Reinhardt's defense John, and of course you know this, they've always been this good.
Right.
So I expect for them to be a lot better this week. I mean, they were superb. They had a superb performance. But I think we're going to see a lot of this year out of Reinhart.
All right, yeah. Their redshirt quarterback, Cole Braden, he was knocked out of the game for a little bit. Elijah Stimmel came in and replaced him and actually had their best pass play of the day. Hit Timothy Miller, mm-hmm. who had a pretty good game. But Devontae Williams pretty much was their only weapon. He caught 6 passes. He was their main rusher very much. And they'll tell you, the defense wants to make you a one-dimensional team. That's the goal of every defense in this nation, to make you focus on one thing, and usually it's the one thing you're not good at. It's what they tried to do there. And Devontae Williams, however, was getting loose. He was making some good runs, and he did get some possession passing completions. But yeah, Timothy Miller had a good game. It's just a shame that we didn't get to actually wrap this up. But you know, Weber, they needed to get home in a hurry, because driving to Orlando, that is not, I think it's like 12 hours to Tampa, so it's probably another similar route to get to their home field in the Orlando area. But you know, as like I said earlier, that's kind of a common theme for these 5 games. You know, it was a lot of ugly football. Maybe we just weren't ready. These teams weren't ready to play this early.
But I would say,
well, you know, we talk about those games, and you might be right about that, John. And to allude to the Miami and Florida matchup, what I saw yesterday, look, the turnover chain came out 4 times for Miami.
Right.
They turned Florida 4 times, but you had a redshirt freshman quarterback in Williams,
mm-hmm.
but he also had a freshman lineman. He had 2 freshman linemen. And he had a center that was making his first career start. So that the inexperience on the offensive line, what do we always say here? The offensive line, you're not going to win a championship, or you're not going to be as good as you as other teams are, has a good running game, a great offensive line, and a great defense.
Mm-hmm.
They had the great defense. The running game really wasn't there, but that's because the offensive line really didn't play all that well. And Florida didn't pull out their best game either.
Right.
In fact, Florida tried to give Miami the game at the end. There were 3 pass interference penalties called on Florida at that final drive. One was on 4th and 34. 4th and 34, there was a penalty, a pass interference penalty called on Florida, which gave Miami another chance. So Miami had dozens of chances to win this game, and Florida was giving it away. I still think Florida, that Georgia-Florida matchup, like Leon had mentioned yesterday, is going to determine the SEC East. Of course, we know that.
Mm-hmm.
I still think Florida's defense can carry them, and Felipe Franks can make some throws, man. He made some pretty good plays and some pretty good throws when he's not under pressure. When he's standing in that pocket, he does a phenomenal job with that, and he's got the receivers to do it. I think Florida, and I hate to say this because, you know, I'm the last guy to ever be a Florida Gator fan ever. I don't even think I would be one if I was the last person on earth, and it was just all Florida Gators, and it was nobody else, and it was just Florida, and that was the only school on earth.
Right.
And, you know, but like I said, they didn't play all that well, but I think that they could win the SEC East this year. I have them against Alabama in the SEC Championship this year. I think Alabama's going to win the SEC, but I do have them in the SEC title game.
Yeah, I believe it's going to come down between Florida and Georgia. Whoever wins that game between Florida and Georgia will determine the outcome of, you know, the SEC, as far as I'm concerned. I think Georgia, you know, with Jake Fromm being – he's a senior, sure, isn't he?
Junior. He's a junior. But yeah, I fully expect him to declare his eligibility for the draft when the year's up.
Yeah.
And that's why he's got to have a good season this year to elevate his draft stock.
And this speaks volumes on Florida. I'm not a Florida fan at all. Let me go off and say this to America. I am a Nebraska Cornhuskers fan.
That's right.
You know, and you know, I remember, you know, Tommy Frazier having the greatest run of history of all runs against the Florida Gators in 1994. But saying that to say, I believe Florida, despite them losing 10 players last year.
Mm-hmm.
Their infrastructure and their culture will carry them to a 10-win season this year. And they will be I believe they will have something loud to say about who's going to win a national championship this year. And even though I believe that Alabama and Clemson are, just a couple light years ahead of them, maybe. Mm-hmm. But they're going to be right in it, though. They're up there with the Ohio States, the Michigans, the Georgias.
Right.
But dare I say the LSUs. So.
All right. We are the last three guys to do a podcast. John Morgo, Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown. And it's time for the last 60 seconds, our last word from our panelists. Daniel's calling in. He'll go first.
All right. So, guys, I don't know if you heard about the tragedy that actually happened in Clayton County. Earlier this week, it was involving 16-year-old Elite Scholars Academy basketball player Imani Bell. Mm-hmm. She collapsed and died. She died actually August 13th. Actually, she was running stairs doing outdoor drills on that day, which was August 13th. And I bring her up because she also ran track, and she also ran track the same year my son ran track. So they knew each other. And we knew her too. Very fun girl. Very exuberant, very smart, very exciting. I do want to send my condolences out to her family. Elite may have violated some heat policies here. And I just, it's funny because I remember Grant, the PA guy for
right.
Reinhardt yesterday. He kept saying, I don't know if you guys were listening or paying attention, but he kept saying it. Drink water. Mm-hmm. Drink plenty of water. Drink plenty of water out here. But not to mention that, temperatures that day had reached a high of 100 degrees. And the heat index was 109. And she was running stairs doing an outdoor drill event. Now, of course, they're going to look into this investigation. Imani collapsed after complaining that she wasn't feeling well, and they said that I think she eventually fell into a cardiac arrest and she died at the hospital. But listen, there has to be something. I know there's something in place, and they put the heat index policy in place because remember we had went through this whole thing where there were a bunch of high school athletes that were passing away because of heat index. They were passing out, they were getting sick because of the heat, the tumultuous heat that we get down here. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much to reiterate to everybody, to all your teams, it is not that serious for you guys to be out here practicing. If you have to move your practice indoors, if you're an outdoor team, you have to move your practice indoors, move it indoors. We are trying to save these kids, man. We're trying to get these kids out here and have longevity in life. That girl was 16 years old. And she really had no business being out there. So I want to send my condolences out to Imani's family, her mother and her father especially. Mm-hmm. Just a sad day. It's a sad day, and it was a sad time here in Clayton County.
All right, Daniel. We're so sorry for your loss. Sorry about it.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I feel with my lighthearted 60, it's kind of hard to follow
me. All right, well, then let me take it then. As I mentioned a little bit earlier, I was watching the Denver Broncos and the LA Rams. It's week 3 of the NFL preseason. Ideally, all NFL starters, all the team one, the first team gets a kind of a dress rehearsal, right? You know, they go maybe a quarter and a half.
Yeah, this is the week.
And then they get pulled. But Sean McVay has made it a policy. He's not playing anybody, no starters for any of these preseason games. Jared Goff came out, Todd Gurley in the little Ram bucket hat. They were wearing matching polos. All the first team specialty skill position players sat out all the preseason. He's not risking anything. He's working his way for the Panthers in 2 weeks. And an interesting thing about the Panthers, Cam Newton got hurt during Carolina's game. He's going to be in doubt for that one. So
he hurt his foot.
Yeah, he hurt his foot. So this is an interesting thing. And, of course, we're all hearing that the NFL wants to shorten these preseason games, and I think everyone wants to see the starters, but again, if you're Sean McVay, you don't want your starters to play in anything where they might get hurt and affect your regular season. So some the way we play football right now, it's going to change somewhat, somehow, between CTE concerns, injury concerns, people being too fast, people being too strong, helmets not being protective enough. It's going to change because it's quickly becoming a charnel house out there. Lamar Miller for Houston, he tore an ACL in his game with the Cowboys last night. So it's getting really, really violent out there, and things are going to change. It's just a matter of how it's going to change, when it's going to change, but it's going to happen sooner rather than later. And as and the many people who figure that out, who realize that, they will be well prepared for whatever form football takes, because in 5 years, in 2024, 2025, this game is going to look nothing like it's looking right now.
John, you know what? And I'm going to say this. In light of that, I remember you asked how many preseason games there should be. I mean, cut it down to maybe three.
Right.
Because you still have to have those two games to where you decide if those third or fourth stringers are going to make the team. And then you have that one dress rehearsal game. I mean, that's the max I would put them at. The minimum would be two.
Okay.
You have the dress rehearsal game, and then you have or you just don't play your stars in the preseason.
Right.
We know they're going to make the team.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. The NFL, they'll figure this thing out, hopefully.
Right. I'd like to speak on the Carmelo Anthony situation. My level of disappointment for, you know, what the NBA is becoming is growing. For one thing, there's no excuse for a potential all-time great like Carmelo Anthony to not have a job on any of the rosters that exist with the NBA right now. Well, you have Vince Carter, who gave the Atlanta Hawks next to nothing last year, has a job. You have my team, the Los Angeles Lakers, just hired Jared Dudley. But yet still, Carmelo Anthony, who's an all-time great, who went on ESPN and express how he has humbled himself and is willing to accept a lesser role, is still without a job. And, you know, some people are getting on people like LeBron James's case about how come Carmelo doesn't have a job, or how come LeBron has to put a good word for him. But you understand, LeBron is not the owner.
Right.
He's not involved in
– we may think he is.
Right. You know, exactly. He might be the face of the franchise, and he may be the default coach, and he may be the default GM, but officially – he is not an owner. He doesn't sign anybody's checks. I mean, hey, even Giannis Antetokounmpo's little brother got a job on the Lakers.
Right.
But yet and still, someone like Carmelo Anthony, you know, hasn't had a job. And let's be honest. When you look at a lot of these vets, all right, and you might think, okay, you know, Dwayne Wade last year with the Cleveland Cavaliers. You mean to tell me that based on Dwayne Wade's playoff performance that the Cleveland Cavaliers couldn't have used him last year? Or if we look at the way Derrick Rose this man ascended to, you know, he's at least a shadow of himself. I mean, I think he may have led his team in scoring this year coming off the bench.
Mm-hmm.
You mean to tell me that the Cleveland Cavaliers couldn't have used him? And I'm saying is they're all within Carmelo Anthony's demographic.
Right.
And if I am the Los Angeles Lakers, and if we're aspiring to what we are aspiring to become, and that is champions, and though people are pitting the Lakers against the Clippers, that's not my primary target.
Right.
The hottest target for me, if I'm a Laker, is those guys up north in that Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, they lost Kevin Durant, but they just had a D'Angelo Russell acquisition? So they're still going to be a problem.
Right.
So we need as much firepower as we can. And who's to say, okay, Carmelo Anthony comes off the bench. But how many minutes in the fourth quarter will he play? You know he's going to play quite a bit. So I don't know, you know, this is, I guess sports is supposed to be the rawest example of a meritocracy that we have. Well, I'm starting to question that now. Is politics or opinions?
It's just Carmelo Anthony's reputation has preceded him. As a man who doesn't really give a – he doesn't care about defense.
And in today's NBA, you're going to have to do something up. But, I mean, that's still – he's still mellow.
Right.
At the end of the day, his reputation may precede him. But the name – he has he has cultural equity in the NBA that he should be able to cash in from, especially around this time. This man is just about 34 years old. Give him a shot. I mean, they didn't even give him a shot on the Olympics team, and he's like the all-time scorer in FIBA basketball. And he couldn't get a shot on the team.
Right.
That's getting ridiculous, and it needs to be some type. We need to start peeling back the layers on this, and something needs to get done yesterday.
All right. Well, we'll see if that happens in the next 7 days when we reconvene on September 1st to tape our next episode of The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast. John Morgo, Leon Brown, Daniel Bolton will be discussing week one of the college football season. We'll be discussing what's going to happen with the NFL. We'll be discussing all that and more. So you're going to want to listen in. Tell a friend, tell an enemy, tell anybody you want about The Last Three Guys to Do the Podcast. Your source for the cutting-edge sports opinion and news. We specialize in Atlanta because that's where we are, but as you can see from Leon, we'll talk about anybody and anything. Thank you so much for joining us. If you want to contact us, hit me up on Twitter at @John_Morgo. We hope to be bringing in new features. We just got the YouTube video capability. However, we're going to wait until Daniel gets into our studio to showcase that.
I'll be back next week.
All right. We just recently did a Periscope video. Hope to get more of that. And we'll be having all that. So lots to talk about, lots to discuss. It's been an exciting time here. This has been The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast, our 44th edition. And have a good night, everybody.